Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning Public Affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we do a lot of health reporting on For the People, including the balance of our show today, but we also want to recognize the important work of a relatively new nonprofit initiative bringing critical information to our state and communities. So we're going to open today's program with the co-founder of the Connecticut Health Investigative Team and find out about some of the iTeam's latest work. Then we'll tackle a unique health-related issue involving the removal of unwanted tattoos. Almost half of us have gotten one or more in our lives, and more than half of the folks with tattoos have at one time or another wanted to get rid of one. So we'll talk with a surgical specialist and his patient about the latest FDA-approved laser procedures being used for successful tattoo removal. And we'll close touching base with Assisted Living Services to talk about everything they have to offer to help folks age in place and their involvement with the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home. We're also going to chat about the upcoming Association for Healthcare at Home's annual conference and exhibition expo with the organization's president and get a sneak preview of that event that's coming up next week in Hartford. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Our radio stations, in partnership with the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence, are encouraging you to wear purple on Thursday, October 24th, as a way to help raise awareness about domestic violence. Purple Thursday is a national day of action as part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and wearing purple is a simple, meaningful way to show your commitment to raising awareness about domestic violence and promoting healthy relationships. Telling people why you're wearing purple gives you the opportunity to have a conversation about domestic violence. You never know whose life you can change with a simple conversation. This is a great event to get your friends, family, coworkers, and everyone else to join. Take pictures of everyone wearing purple and post them on social media to help spread the word, and be sure to tag our radio station and the CCADV using the hashtag Purple Thursday. Well, while I am so pleased to have found my calling as a journalist and broadcaster, I don't talk enough at all, never mind on this program, to colleagues. And I was so pleased a couple of months ago to make the acquaintance of Lynn DeLucia, who's a co-founder of the Connecticut Health iTeam. And we wanted to bring her onto the program in the hopes that she'll represent the beginning of a reoccurring host of guests that we will have on the program, representing the growing world of nonprofit journalism. In this case, the nonprofit Connecticut Health Investigative Team is dedicated to producing in-depth public service journalism on issues of health and safety. So, Lynn, because what you do is such a perfect fit for what I do, I'm so glad that you're going to be like kind of the cornerstone on which I hope to kind of build this series of programs, talking with other journalists who are engaged in the nonprofit storytelling and investigations and information gathering. So thank you for being part of the program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
So what's your backstory? What made you come to the world of nonprofit journalism, and what kind of experiences brought you down the path?
Well, I always knew I wanted to be a journalist since I was very, very young, and I grew up in this area. I grew up in Hamden and used to always read the Journal Courier and the New Haven Register, which were delivered to my door. So I actually started my career at the New Haven Register and was a reporter for several years, then was city editor, and then eventually, after 20 years there, moved to the Hartford Current, where I was an assistant managing editor. And so I was at the Current for 17 years. And then at that point, it was just starting to be at the time when newspapers were really starting to get that, that financial
pinch. The squeeze. They were in the squeeze.
Yes, absolutely. They were in financial squeeze. And as a supervisor, I was involved in a number of downsizings and layoffs at the paper. And I had just decided that maybe it was time to try something different in the field. And nonprofit had just started percolating. This was like in 2010, mm-hmm. when myself and actually Lisa Chetical, who mm-hmm. Is someone that I had worked with for years at the Register and then worked with her at the Current, we had started talking about maybe trying something on our own. So for about a year, we brainstormed ideas and looked for some funding opportunities. And then in 2010, those funding opportunities came together for us. So in December of 2010, together we launched the Connecticut Health Eye Team. And then it's, you know, been pretty much a great ride ever since.
What was it that made you, you know, when you look across kind of the fairly limited range of buttons that you can push to touch on large communities of people, was health just kind of the logical one to go to? Because virtually at some point or at many points, everybody could somehow benefit from information that you could share or purvey.
Well, one of the things that I knew and from my work actually at the Current was every time we did a reader's survey, health was always in the top five. And one of the things that Lisa and I noticed not only at the Current, but at other papers, was as they started to downsize, some of these specialty beats had were going away. And certainly health desks were part of that downsizing at a lot of operations. So we did see it as an opportunity to fill a void. But also across the country, you know, with talk of the Affordable Care Act, and that, I mean, we could see that there was going to be this wave to encourage people to get involved in their own healthcare more, to ask questions, to have the knowledge and the information to make good healthcare choices. So we saw those two things going on at once and thought that this was a great opportunity for us to launch a website, which, yes, is a niche. It absolutely is a niche because we have pretty much just covered health and safety for 10 years.
Mm. It's great that, you know, there's folks like you and your team who are working so hard to try to provide that alternative voice and the alternative information to kind of, you know, act as a check and balance against organizations that, you know, certainly want to tell their version of the story first and loudest. So certainly one of the things that has been impacting the world and Connecticut now, as we're learning, we're still looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,100 deaths in this state just last year, is the opioid epidemic, which is something that you folks really kind of got on board with and started talking about very early on after your formation in 2010, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, one of the things that that also the Affordable Care Act gave was a lot of information that wasn't available prior to its enactment. And what I mean by that is, for example, prescribing data. I mean, years ago, that this information wasn't available, but the ACA did kind of open the floodgates on lots of information from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which wasn't readily available. So early on in our coverage, one of the things that we looked at were the prescribing habits of doctors and licensed clinicians in Connecticut. And one of the things that we found was that in a small community in Derby, Connecticut, we had one of the top 10 prescribers of opioids in the country. And it was a nurse who was a licensed advanced practical nurse, which means that she has a license to prescribe. Yep. And she was working in a clinic in Derby, a pain clinic, and she was one of the top 10 prescribers of opioids. So way back in, this was like in 2013, mm-hmm. we started looking at that and tracking it. And then that also caught the attention of the feds, which ended up being a much bigger story, where a company called Incest Therapeutics was had its drug reps going out talking to licensed clinicians, not only in Connecticut but throughout the country, and encouraging them by giving them money to prescribe their drug. Mm. So that really turned into a big story for us. And so we tracked that for a very long time, and a lot of people have been indicted. Some are still awaiting sentencing, including the nurse who operated out of the Derby clinic. And what was really interesting for us was more recently, with the help of the Washington Post, we took advantage of a database of information that they got from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, which took them several years to get. Mm-hmm. But they were able to get it through FOI, the Freedom of Information. Mm-hmm. But what we found by going through the data is that in Connecticut, the total number of prescription pain pills supplied between 2006 and 2012 was over 675 million. Mm. And we were also able to look into the numbers, and we noticed that in is the Naugatuck River Valley, which includes, towns like Derby, Waterbury, Torrington, yep, and Ansonia, we found that they had very, very high levels of prescribing. And in Ansonia alone, they sold in that time period, the CVS pharmacy in Ansonia sold over 5.4 million pills during that time period, about 272 pills for every woman, man, child in Ansonia. Mm. And what was so interesting to us was, of course, years prior, through the prescribing data, we were writing about this Derby Pain Clinic, which had this high, very, very high rate of prescriptions. Mm-hmm. And then this data basically just almost connected the dots for us that mm-hmm. it's no surprise that a CVS pharmacy in Ansonia
within walking distance almost of the Derby Clinic.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Would have it.
Yeah.
So,
well, this, Lynn, this speaks to, anybody who kind of, hears this enemy of the people, and they regard the information they get on their social network page as the news, and don't have the same kind of regard for journalistic expertise. This is a perfect example. It wasn't some law enforcement agency or huge global journalism. CNN, New York Times. This was a small nonprofit boutique website that kind of pulled the curtain off this whole thing. And it really does speak to why an organization like the Connecticut Health Eye Team is so important for people to pay attention to. If you're interested, folks, in learning more, you can go to c-hit.org. That's their site. And see more about what they do. But in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have with you, Lynn, I'd like to just turn the attention to helping our listeners understand why the work that you do in monitoring regulatory actions beyond the world of the opioid epidemic is also critically important. in the face of what's going on right here, probably in everybody's neighborhood, no matter where they live in Connecticut, they're seeing their local doctors, their family physicians or practices becoming part of huge medical networks, and they're seeing their local hospitals now becoming parts of networks that may have all in-state or out-of-state or perhaps even national affiliations. Why is it so important to be monitoring regulatory actions and being able to take that really complicated information and put it into a format where people can click on their website, read it, and understand it?
Well, we think it's important because we want to be able to give people choice. As the bigger hospitals in the state, such as Yale New Haven Hospital and Hartford Hospital, buy and take over these lot of doctors' practices all over the state, we feel that it's really important to provide as much information as we can so that people can make their own decisions and on who they should see, what doctor, maybe what hospital they should go to. So there's several regulatory bodies in the state that look at and complaints that are filed against doctors and other licensed practitioners. And what we do is we actually go to these meetings every month, get the citations that are issued and write about them because we think it's important. We think it will, we're hoping what it does is raise awareness and empower people to make informed healthcare choices. One of the things that's interesting is most of the time people don't want to challenge a doctor. And if you go see a primary care doctor and that primary care doctor decides to send you to a specialist, well, what we're trying to do is encourage you to say, hey, well, let me look up and see what that doctor's all about. Let me check his license and see if he or she has any actions on it by the state. And so this is all information that we try to put together. And not only for licensed doctors and other practitioners in the state, we also provide transparency with the state hospital inspection reports. Just another tool for people to look at and examine if in fact they need to go to a hospital for a surgical procedure. So we provide those too on our website, and we are the only state entity doing that, only media entity doing that right now.
Yeah, I can see with specialty reporting on veterans' health, environmental health, women's health, disparities. You have a pull down on fines and sanctions where people can go and look up and see if the healthcare provider or any of the world of support services have faced scrutiny at the state or federal level. You have a podcast, you host events, you work with students, and you have the data mine where people who are inclined can go and peruse that information. So much more. And we hope everyone listening will consider bookmarking and visiting c-hit.org for the Connecticut Health iTeam and learn more about what they do. I'm looking forward to learning more by continuing to visit this organization. And as we said, this is a nonprofit journalistic initiative, award-winning journalists coming together based right here in Connecticut, providing the public with informative stories about health, safety, and medical issues. Lynn DeLucia is the co-founder of this organization, and we're so pleased to welcome her here as the first of what we're hoping is going to be regular visits with representatives from the world of journalism who have sought to work in nonprofit arenas, all for the public good, as you have done so well since your beginning almost 10 years ago, Lynn. Thank you so much for being on the program. Well, we report a lot on health-related items on this program, and I have to say over approaching three decades in health reporting, I have not had the opportunity to talk to an expert about issues related to tattoos. Nearly half of Americans, 42%, have at least one tattoo, and 25% of them regret their decision. So if you're looking to erase that bad decision, a new FDA-approved laser specifically targets tattoo ink to give your skin a clean treatment. And I'm so pleased to meet and welcome to the program facial surgeon Dr. Paul Stanislaw, who is going to be talking with us now. And then we're going to actually reach out to a patient of his, Tony Chamberlain, to explain the tattoo removal process. So, Dr. Stanislaw, thank you so much for being on the program this morning. Tell us just a bit about your practice.
So I'm a facial plastic surgeon. I'm located in Avon, Connecticut. I do only cosmetic things, and so that's facelifts, rhinoplasties, and such. But we also have lasers for different things, for like aging, wrinkles, and stuff like that. But we also have lasers for tattoo removal.
So I guess in your line of work, it's much more common to be giving somebody a treatment to sort of make cosmetic improvements. But yet some folks who have tattoos who got them in hopes of making a positive impact or feed something in them. It looks like quite often they are now coming forward wanting to get those tattoos adjusted or even removed.
So today we use lasers for a lot of different things, and I do use lasers a lot for skin resurfacing and making people look younger. So it's just sort of just another branch of laser treatments is the tattoo removal. And most of those people who are coming in usually have had tattoos done when they were younger. So the younger you are, the greater the likelihood that you're going to regret it later.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the reasons that people are coming forward, aside from the regret? Are there some actual physical aspects of getting a tattoo that change over time?
I guess, yes, depending on the location. So as we age, our body changes, and oftentimes those tattoos that looked really good when we had a 20-year-old body now don't look so good when we're a 50- or 60-year-old body. But a lot of times it's more work-related. People are going into the military, law enforcement, different career choices where they don't want to have that tattoo showing that, isn't really professional-looking anymore. A lot of times it's just, they've outgrown it. It's a tattoo of a boyfriend's name or a girlfriend's name from a long time ago, and they're no longer with that person. They just want to get rid of it.
It's interesting that given the popularity and explosion of body art that we've seen over the past probably 20 years or so, that there are still a lot of jobs that and careers that put policies in place that make it difficult for people that have tattoos. Roughly, if you can even tell me, what is the percentage of your client base that is coming to you for tattoo removal work because of work demands?
Oh, probably anywhere from 25% to 33%.
Wow.
Quarter to half of the patients are, it's work related. Even from the military standpoint, they're changing their requirements too. Over time, they're seeing all these people with tattoos, and so they're actually loosening up their restrictions as well over time. So in the past, it was a non-starter, but now they're like, yeah, you can have them where they don't show, but you can't have it on your neck, that type of stuff. Hmm. So I think businesses are evolving to the new norm. But still, I think we still are, we like to say we're really open-minded, but we're still kind of closed-minded when it comes to a lot of things like this, like that and ear gauges. Those are two common things that we do a lot just because of work-related issues.
Yeah. Well, you talked about the laser treatment a little bit before, and we're going to expand that conversation. But is the type of newly approved laser treatment that you're now using at your practice one of the only successful ways that a tattoo can be amended or treated or removed?
Historically, we used to do what's called dermabrasion, which is like sanding. Mm. However, that left a lot of scars and was very traumatic to the area. We still sometimes will excise tattoos. So if the tattoos are small, or if the people have an allergic reaction to the tattoo ink, which is common, we have to actually cut them out. We can't treat them with lasers. Mm. With these newer lasers now, we can treat them without, you know, cutting into them, without having long downtimes. But it does take time, even with the newer lasers. It's not a quick one and done. It can be up to 20 sessions sometimes, depending on the tattoo.
So it sounds like it's almost the opposite of putting a complicated tattoo on someone. Someone may sit for many sessions over a long period of time to get some kind of extravagant body art applied. Is the laser process similar to that? You have to do it either like a piece at a time, or how does that work?
So the lasers, so there's two major categories when you look at lasers. One is the color that the laser emits. So there's three major colors that we use for the different colors of the tattoos. And then there's different time frames in which that laser is emitted. So the older technology was a nanosecond technology. The laser light was only emitted for a nanosecond, so it was a very, very short pulse of light. The newer lasers now are what we call picoseconds, so they're even shorter. So the shorter the dose of energy, the shorter the dose of light, the less injury there is to the skin. So the picosecond lasers are less traumatic than the nanosecond lasers. The issue, though, is that not all inks can be treated with one laser. Mm. So depending on the different colors, depending on the size of the particles, sometimes we still have to use the nanosecond laser. Sometimes we do, you know, we first treat it with the nanosecond laser, and then we then treat it with a picosecond laser. So it all depends. The more colors, the more professional it is, oftentimes the harder it is to remove.
Okay. Well, what is the process fairly simple once you have the right tools and the willing patient?
Yes. I mean, it takes, you know, depending on the size of the tattoo. So, like, if someone has like a whole sleeve, like their whole arm, you're looking probably over an hour to 2 hours to do that one treatment. But once you know, the treatments are actually, you know, for smaller ones are relatively quick. They're relatively pain-free. A lot of times we'll put topical numbing medication on and stuff like that, so it might be a little bit of an ouch, like a hot rubber band snapping you for a second, but that's about it. And then afterwards, it doesn't hurt afterwards. You just keep a little Vaseline on it afterwards, just like when you had the tattoo placed in the first place.
Mm. Is it true that if two people who get the exact same tattoo on the exact same part of their body, that it could be easier to do that tattoo removal by laser on one person than the other? And if that's the case, why?
The major issue with that is skin color. Mm. So the darker your skin color, the darker the skin color, the more gentle we have to go, because the pigment cells in your skin will absorb a lot of that light energy. So if you go very hard on someone who's got darker skin, you might hypopigment them or turn their skin whiter, more of a scar appearance. When people have lighter skin, like they're like of, you know, Northern European descent, and they're very, very fair, you can actually go harder and more aggressive with them because they don't have the pigment that absorbs all that energy.
Oh, okay. Well, are there some types of tattoos that you actually can't ever fully remove?
Yes. Yeah, so some colors, like the faint yellows, the faint pinks, light tans and light browns, those, like, again, tattooing and the ink technology has improved tremendously. Mm-hmm. You know, in the past it was just like, oh, you had a black tattoo and that was it.
Yeah.
Now they have a full palette of different colors. The colors that are closer to skin color are much, much harder to treat. You know, the darker ones are easier, the light ones are harder to remove, and sometimes we just can't get it all. We can't get rid of it all.
Hmm. Are there actual chemical components in the ink that make certain colors harder to deal with, or, you know, certain applications harder to deal with than others?
So, again, there's a lot of characteristics to the ink. So not only is it the color, It also has to, size, to do with the size of the particles in which, the, you know, how big the particle is of the ink. So, again, some like the picosecond lasers, the quicker lasers, are better for the smaller particles. A nanosecond are better for the bigger particles. Also, how deep that tattoo is placed. So the deeper that tattoo is, the harder it is to treat. So a lot of times when people have amateur ones where they, you know, they just did it with like charcoal and they just put it on the surface, or even sometimes traumatic tattoos, you know, from injuries, those can be removed easier than a professional one because the professional ones are deeper and they're of a better quality ink. So,
well, in closing, I know there are a few things you want to remind people of, but something that I've seen and heard about is the do-it-yourself tattoo removal lasers that you can actually buy on the internet.
So they aren't really lasers. They're just lights, and they really don't work. The other aspect of it, there is no FDA-approved home remedy. There's no FDA-approved home cream that's going to get rid of a tattoo. So you really are relegated to a laser technology or excision. And in that situation, you want to have someone who does a lot of it, who actually is a medical, you know, who knows sterile technique and knows how to treat this safely.
Yeah. And I guess they're but for the half a bottle of tequila, I guess it's kind of critical that before you actually put down your money and sit with that tattoo artist, you really need to kind of consider the long term, right?
Yeah, because it's. They're not easy to remove. People think that it's, you know, quick and easy. That you can average is about 8 to 12 treatments. Sometimes it goes over 20 treatments, depending on the ink, and it can add up very quickly. The industry average for a tattoo removal is $250 per 15 minutes.
Wow! Well,
so it adds up pretty quick.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and then switch over and have a quick conversation with one of your patients about their experience. But in closing, if people want to learn more about your practice and what you do, where do they go?
The website's stanislawmd.com. It's STANISLAWMD.com. Or the office number is 860-409-1515.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Dr. Paul Stanislaw Jr. is a founding practitioner of the Stanislaw Facial Plastic Surgery Center. We appreciate your information, and we're going to take a quick break and then go and talk to one of your patients. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Connoisseur Media's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. And in the theme of our program, it is health-related. We want to remind you that last week, the Connecticut Office of Health Strategy launched HealthScore CT, a cost estimator and consumer tool that allows users to compare the cost of medical care at Connecticut hospitals and provider networks. This interactive website allows consumers and providers to search, sort, and filter by location, health measure, provider, network, quality, rating, and cost. HealthScore CT cost estimators pull information from the state's all payer claims database, and it allows users to compare the cost of specific procedures offered by medical providers throughout the state. The site currently contains nearly 50 inpatient and outpatient services, and new measures are being added regularly. At the launch, the cost estimator included nearly 235,000 lives and 264,000 medical procedures. You can test drive the site now at healthscorect.com. All right. Well, as you heard from Dr. Stanislaw, the prospect of removing a tattoo can be challenging, maybe a little painful, certainly sometimes expensive, depending on the scope of it, and maybe not always successful. I'm so glad Tony Chamberlain volunteered to chat with us. He is a patient of Dr. Stanislaw. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the tattoo that you had removed and when and why you got it.
Oh, boy. It's been a little over a year now since I... when I got it, you said.
Yes, yes. When you got it.
Oh, when I got it, I was in my... I believe I was in my like 25 or 24 years old when I got it. And the reason why I ended up getting rid of it is because, you know what, I have multiple tattoos, and my mother never had a problem with it until I got this skull on my arm, and suddenly my mom was very disappointed in me.
Oh, okay. So so you actually, how long did you have the tattoo that was removed on you before you saw Dr. Stanislaw?
I was about 24 when I got it. I'm 53 now.
Oh, okay. So quite a while.
Yep.
So it's interesting. Dr. Stanislaw was saying that it is the lighter pigments, the flesh tones and the tans and the light colors that are often most challenging. I would imagine, you know, the skull has just kind of like the off-white and dark shadows. Did you find that for any reason it was either really, really difficult to remove, or you couldn't fully remove the ink pigments from your skin with the laser treatments?
No, actually, the majority of what I have, it worked very well. There were a couple of spots that I guess there was too much ink in there when the tattoo was made, placed on my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took a little more concentration from the treatments. But I'm seeing good results right now.
Oh, excellent. Was it extremely painful?
Actually, it was more painful getting the tattoo done.
Oh, okay. Then how about painful to your wallet?
that definitely could be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I'm a volunteer to help them with their new system.
Oh, that's great. Excellent.
So it helps.
How long did the treatment process take to get to where you're at now from when you went in there with the tattoo in its original state?
Let me see. One treatment lasts, at first it was lasting about 45 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to have a couple of months of waiting before you can go back for another treatment to allow your body to start removing the ink pigmentation.
Oh, I get it. Interesting.
And then once that's done, you need to go back in and get another treatment. As a matter of fact, I was due for a treatment this week, but I had to postpone it until next week.
Oh, okay. Well, in closing, Tony, last word, if you were meeting up with someone in a social situation or in the line of work that had a tattoo they wanted to get removed, what would you tell them?
I would absolutely recommend them. It's worth it. I'm actually stunned about how faded it is. You really have a hard time even noticing it at this moment.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate your time. Tony Chamberlain, a patient of Dr. Stanislaw, who went through this advanced laser removal process and sounding happy with both the process and the outcome. So, Tony, thank you so much for your time this morning and chatting with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we're going to wrap up the show this morning talking about the future of healthcare at home for folks that want to age in place here in Connecticut. The need for elder care in our state is going to continue to climb in the coming years, and home as well as community-based services saved the state of Connecticut almost $361 million last year and over $1.7 billion over the last 12 state fiscal cycles by keeping people in their own homes. Today, I'm going to be visiting with Lynn Schmidt, who's Director of Marketing for Assisted Living Services. But right now, I'm joined by Tracy Wodach. She's President and CEO of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home to talk about the future of elder care in our state in an upcoming conference. So, Tracy, tell us about your association.
Yeah, thank you, Jen. The Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home is the largest member organization for home health and hospice care. We champion home-based solutions in Connecticut and foster cost-effective, person-centered health care in the setting that people prefer most, which is their own homes. And our members our members are primarily the state licensed and Medicare certified home health and hospice agencies. These are the agencies that serve the patients throughout Connecticut with their post-acute medical, mental health, and serious illness care needs. They're the ones that bring the nurses, the therapists, and the social workers out to the home to help people get better in their homes versus in an institutional setting. We also have a number of non-medical home care agencies, such as assisted living services. Non-medical home care would be the type of services that you would offer in the home to assist with daily living activities, such as bathing, personal care needs, meal preparation, homemaking, et cetera.
So does your association actually do political advocacy on behalf of your members?
So we actually serve the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home does a number of things in collaboration with our members as well as other state agencies and other associations. But one of our primary focuses is for public policy and healthcare system change. We do advocate both at the federal level and at the state level while ensuring quality, cost-effective home health, hospice, and community-based solutions.
What was your biggest victory, would you say, on the political and legislative front, either federally or here in Connecticut in the past year?
Well, we didn't have a lot of victories this last year. It was more awareness. We had a brand new, or I shouldn't say a brand new, but several brand new legislators who needed quite a bit of education, and understanding the landscape of home and community-based services is a difficult path to help legislators understand. So I would say our biggest victory was helping educate them so we can pave the future of being able to continue to serve our members and our providers in the community.
And so I guess a lot more of that education and networking is going to be going on October 25th. You've got a big event coming up. Tell us about that and who is your key audience?
So the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home holds an annual conference and expo, exhibition expo. And this year, our annual conference will take place at the Hartford Marriott downtown on Friday, October 25th, throughout the day from 8 a.m. until 4:30. Our theme is the future of healthcare at home, looking at new landscapes, new payment structures, and new opportunities. We'll have about 250 of our state's top home health, hospice, and home care industry leaders. They will attend to hear from several national experts addressing the latest trends in home and community-based services with a particular focus on the changing landscape, moving more and more people back into the community as well as trying to maintain our community dwellers for long-term viability. And then we'll also be looking at payment model changes and technology.
Excellent. And for folks who may not be the audience for this event, your association still offers myriad resources for non-professionals, for families that may be in that position where they have to either immediately or are in the early stages of considering how to handle the question of whether to age in place or perhaps look at institutional opportunities.
Yes, we have a very robust website, www.cthealthcareathome.org, www.cthealthcareathome.org. And our website is open for both our providers as well as consumers. We look at ways, we offer resources on ways to address how to care for a loved one at home, information about home health and hospice services, the differences between hospice and palliative care, a database search that will allow you to find specific services in the various towns throughout Connecticut. And last year we published a magazine which is available for the public. You may find it out in senior centers, libraries, doctor's offices, that helps people understand the best way to navigate through how to care for a loved one at home. We have regular business hours at our office at 110 Barnes Road and can certainly help people if they come in. We also will guide them through any type of service questions by having them call our office, regular business hours, 203-265-9931.
Excellent. Tracy Woodash is president and CEO of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home. If this is an area that you are interested in, their upcoming event, The Future of Healthcare at Home, New Landscapes, New Payment Structures, New Opportunities, that annual conference and exhibition expo coming to the Hartford Marriott downtown Friday, October 25th from 8 to 4:30. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us this morning, Tracy, and we'll go meet one of your exhibitors and presenters, Lynn Schmidt. So thanks. So as we indicated, Lynn Schmidt is now joining us on the phone. She's director of marketing for the award-winning assisted living services. Lynn, Tracy was mentioning after we wrapped up with her that you guys were a big award winner at this event last year, the annual conference.
Yes, we were. Yes, that's true.
That's great. Well, tell us about assisted living technologies and assisted living services.
Well, Assisted Living Services is our home care agency. It is one of the oldest and largest in-home care agencies in the state of Connecticut. We provide the care and services to seniors and individuals with varying disabilities that allow them to remain safe in their own home. We offer a variety of services, everything from homemaking services to personal care aids, and 24-hour live-in care as well.
Okay.
Our sister company, Assisted Living Technologies, provides the technology-based support systems and devices that address key issues that often impact the aging population.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things such as falls, medication compliance, wandering, social isolation. Our goal between the two companies is to combine the two services to allow seniors to age in place, because studies show that most people desire to stay in their own home or their place of residence, and that's what the two companies help to ensure.
So why is this annual event that's coming up next Friday so critical for an organization like yours?
Well, the event is, you know, consists of other professionals that we work with on a professional basis. We refer out oftentimes our clients to other types of care, other types of services. So, in other words, let's say we're working with a family and there's a hospitalization, maybe an example, pneumonia. And once that person recovers in the hospital, they're now going on to a second level of care to rehabilitate, typically like a skilled rehab facility. And we work with those organizations as well. When that person finishes their rehabilitation process, they often are coming back home to us, and we're providing that care that's going to keep them in the home. So the people at this event come from varying disciplines throughout the elder care community.
Mm-hmm.
They might be hospice organizations, they might be hospitals, they might be visiting nurse associations, which we also work with,
mm-hmm.
because they provide that medical component that we don't. I mean, we're a non-medical home care agency, although our aides are trained as certified nurses' aides, home health aides, or state PCA trained, and we do have nurses on staff in a management capacity. Traditional home care is considered non-medical, and the VNA piece picks up that skilled piece. So they might have a physical therapist that comes in the home, or an occupational therapist that comes into the home,
mm-hmm.
or a skilled nurse who's doing, let's say, wound care or things of that nature. So we work with those organizations very closely because it's the full gamut of care.
And you're not only going to be exhibiting at that event with stuff, including your CarePlus program and the technologies, electronic medication dispensers, mobile personal emergency
all of those.
Response.
So there's two booths. We have two booths exhibiting there. One is for technologies and one is for services. So the technologies booth is what you're referring to when you're talking about the technology-based support systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they're all going to be available for people to look at, and you know, there's a variety of different components.
Yeah.
There's like you were saying, medication dispensers that have alerts locked to medication dispensers. There's personal emergency responses with fall detection, a whole variety of things. And those items are going to be on display at this event.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, your CEO is presenting, right?
Mario D'Aquila, who is our Chief Operating Officer, mm-hmm. and he is also the president of our technologies division,
yep.
is going to be presenting. Yes, he will be at this event.
Yeah, he's been a guest on the program before. What's he going to be talking about?
I think he's going to be mostly talking about the technologies and the changes in that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
There have been so many things over the last couple of years, and they're all cutting edge, and we try to stay ahead of the curve. So he's going to be talking about the wireless technology devices that can be utilized to supplement or augment caregiving. He is going to be giving examples of some of the newer items and talking more in depth on those, and you know, telling people, of course, to stop over at our booth so they can see how these devices can work to ensure their safety of their patients.
Mm-hmm. In the last minute or so that we have with you, what are a few of the things that people who aren't going to the this event this year, what are a few of the things that they can learn by visiting your showroom in Meriden?
So our showroom is actually moving to Cheshire because we just... we purchased, actually back in May, and it's been under renovation, two large professional buildings right on Highland Avenue in Cheshire. Oh, our new address is going to be 290 Highland Avenue. We also have 288 Highland Avenue for one of our other programs. But that showroom will be now in Cheshire. And pretty much everything that I was talking about earlier will be there, everything from wandering devices to personal emergency response to medication dispensers to components that help with isolation where people can Skype in and talk with and see family members.
Yeah.
There's a huge variety, almost more than I can mention,
yeah.
and they can come to that showroom and see firsthand what might be helpful for their loved ones.
Great. And also, I arrange in-home consultation. You guys
will
do the full review.
We do in-home consultations as well, especially on the services side.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we're coming, we're taking on a new client, we like to meet with the family, meet with the client, so that we make sure we're understanding their needs and we address them correctly. And it helps us also when we're assigning an aide to make sure that that aide is the right match for that person.
Great. Well, let's wrap it up with the website and let you go.
Sure. So our website is www.assistedlivingct.com.
Mm-hmm.
And our number, if people want to reach us, is 203-634-8668.
Lynn Schmidt.
That's our main number.
Lynn Schmidt, Director of Marketing for Assisted Living Services, one of the many organizations who are members of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home, and one of the exhibitors and presenters at the Connecticut Association's annual conference and exhibit expo Friday, October 25th from 8 to 4:30 at the Hartford Marriott downtown. Thank you for being part of the show this morning, Lynn. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.